woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Warm up base, Saxon Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Jack Silverman on the board, and for Mr. Matt Weber, who's where's your man? Was he,
I believe he's in Texas. I think he said San Antonio, but I could be wrong.
We need a little volume, man. And we're good. We'll get it. There you go. The, S&P futures, we're up. We'll get back and find them. S&P futures are, down 225, Dow futures down 4, NASDAQ down 750. It's after a record week last week. Do we have Mr. Lou?
I should be on, I hope.
You are, bud. How are you?
Well, it's kind of out of place for me to be on Monday morning, but other than being discombobulated with that, I'm good.
Well, it doesn't matter. People will find you. I had people calling last week, where is my Lou fix?
Well, sorry about the, sorry to hear about the car breakdown. That's ugly, especially at that hour.
Well, it could always have been worse. It was right on the block before I got on the expressway. And
that could have been much worse.
And I had plenty of room to pull over, and I called AAA, and they were there in 35 minutes, and they hauled it down to my south side guy, and everything was fixed in a little while. It was, I thought I'd blown a hose, but it turns out there's a pressure relief valve somewhere on the motor. So if it ever gets way over something, this will release pressure. It's a safety thing. Well, after many years, it's liable to go when it doesn't need to. So it did.
After many years, it became unsafe.
Yes. So it just, because I mean, it was like, all of a sudden there was like, you know, no juice in there. I mean, it went, you know, I mean, it was fine a block away, and then all of a sudden it was hot.
Yeah.
And, so anyway, it's all back together and all good. Except I probably could use a new one. They don't even make them anymore, Lou. There's no, 2500 series, Suburbans.
That's sort of what this new role that I'm taking on is about is situations like that, only with other things like airplanes and other defense items and you know, specialty manufactured
like spare parts yeah. And stuff. Well, I mean, that's neat.
Yeah. So if you've got one of the things you see with the new 3D printing capability and especially the new metal alloys that are available in the powders that they use for printing is the ability to replicate, you know, stuff that's not being made anymore, and you don't have to necessarily tool up for it, and you just have to have either the part which you can 3D scan or, you know, drawings or a CAD, a computer assisted design file. And you can get a reasonable working replica of the part, and with the new, you know, the metal printing, you can actually replicate the thing. In some cases, better in better form and in better better quality than the original. So that's part of what I'm doing right now.
Well, actually, Lou, believe it or not, I'm one of the. Actually, you probably would believe it, given my interest in a lot of the wackiest stuff on Earth. I usually go to the machine shop show every year. And there are an incredible amount of machines that you can, this is not 3D printing, these are actual machines
yeah,
that you can,
called CNC, yep.
Well, I mean, my nephew does this for a firm fabrication firm. He programs, and you can pretty much get one part made by one machine. It won't do the slitting, I don't think, but it'll do the grinding, it'll do the bending, and it'll do the punching of whatever part you sort of need, like, one time. Now, if you're going to build 20 of them, that's the last thing you want to do is use that machine 20 times. But because when you have a factory, like at Pullman, the simplest thing was, what do they call it? You get this huge roll of steel, you slit it, you bend it, and then you punch it, right? And
yep.
That's the order of the day. And that's virtually it for any steel fabrication, that whatever it is you have. And that's pretty much the order you're going. And I think what you're talking about, I was one of the, shall we say, ass bleeps. You hear about the guys that that have the toilet for $10,000 toilet type of thing. I was one of those guys for the Boston contract at Pullman.
Oh, okay.
In the midst of as we were running, you run off all the front ends of the car, and you run off this part, you run off that part, and when you're done, you pretty much wing the tooling out in the backyard. So I kept writing these guys back in the day before emails, and I kept saying, "Hey guys, give me a spare parts list, will you? I'll price it out for you, and if it's the 61st or 62nd part, because we did 60 cars, it's not a big deal." Sure enough, the last car's out the door, in comes the spare parts list.
Yeah.
The entire factory is like naked of any Boston stuff. So I'm telling him, okay, you want an end cap? It's like, $10,000. Hey, what the hell? It's out in the backyard. What do you want me to tell you? Here's the letter. Here's the date, 3 months ago. You want an end cap? Let me know. It was, I didn't feel good about it, but actually, I think I priced them light.
Yeah, and that's an issue. That's an issue with a lot of legacy aircraft and vehicles and things like that. So this company will I hope, as we motor along, move into that realm. I wanted to just touch briefly because I was prepped.
Hey, before you do that, I got to tell you what I did yesterday.
Oh, wait, go ahead.
If you were here, I'd have picked you behind up. You still lived here. I went to see the big locomotive, the big boy.
Oh, okay.
On Western Chicago, and you got pretty close to it, touching it, talking to the conductor. Of course, you know me. Once I got to talk to the conductor, I'm like, get all these people out of here. Let me drive this thing. But that didn't happen.
So where was it parked?
It was out in West Chicago. It was out there. It was out by Cantini.
Uh-huh.
It was a ways. I mean, it took us, a half hour from Orland, from Audrey's. It's pretty far out west. I mean, it's where the land where a guy left his shoes, for sure. But I don't think they want to bring it in very much. But talk about a middle America crowd. It's going all over the country for the 150th year anniversary of the Transcontinental Railroad. But, man, talk about the thing is 1.5 million pounds, Lou.
And so, well, yeah, and that's one of the, if you look at some of the early movies and early science fiction stuff, the expansion of and the whole steampunk ethic is derived around the way they built things back then, which was the assumption that everything would be bigger. Things would get larger, things would get, more massive. You see this in Metropolis, the movie, and some other early films like this. And so you can look at that design there, and they were extrapolating from that, that everything was going to get monstrous in the future, and because that was the way they built then. So it I'm not surprised that it was that big, and think of how much energy it took to move that thing.
Well, it's a 4884. No, you're probably the only person around who knows what that means.
4884.
That's how you talk about the wheels.
Oh, I was going to say it has to be gearing of some kind.
Well, it's so big that between the four is the little wheels in front, the leading truck. That was probably the single biggest invention of the U.S. over Europe, was the steering truck. Because there's no way you would keep those big, huge wheels on the rail if you didn't have the front four guiding them. And in between the two huge things of, I'm sorry, 4884, in between the four, there's four huge wheels on each side, then there's a break, but it was actually an articulation joint, because this thing can bend in the middle. Otherwise, it would never go around a curve.
Yep.
So you can see where it will bend maybe, you know, 8-10 inches or something. And then you start the second half where there's another 8 big wheels and 4 little wheels. And then there's a massive, like a 10-wheel oil burner. It's not a coal burner. Nobody will let you run a coal burner anymore because you spit so much stuff out of the stack, it starts fires all along the roadbed, the roadway. So I don't think anybody would approve a coal guy coming by. But this is oil, and it was designed to pull coal car, or essentially freight cars, over the mountains. It's a big sucker. And so I got to talk to some of these guys, and I was asking them, I was very curious as to how you actually pull the train behind it, Lou, because these things only provided traction power, which means they could pull a train, and they provided air. But now, when you see a train go by, and you see a train with maybe 12 cars and 2 locomotives, you say, God, those are weenie locomotives. Why do you need 2 locomotives to pull 12 passenger cars? And the reason is, it's for electric, for the air conditioning. Because all the power comes from the front end. But with these things, what somebody did, Americans are pretty clever, behind the oil car is a generator car. So all it does is generate the power. So that car powers, you know, in the old days, the passenger car would have a generator on the wheel just like a bicycle would.
Yeah,
and
right.
You would run all your electric in the car off that, and then you also had batteries that would power up. So when you pull in the station, the batteries would take over. But now, when you get on a RTA car, an Amtrak car, all that power comes to the front end. You don't have any of that crap. You don't have batteries on every car. You got to replace, and you don't have generators in every car. It was real tough. But this thing provides traction power. I bet it can pull, you know, 50, 60 cars easy. It's a monster machine. But
you don't see too much of this or as much of this around Chicago because it's just not practical. But out here, if you drive, if you go outside of Denver in any direction on I-25 for maybe 30, 40 miles, you will see these mile long trains. Mile and a half long trains running with coal cars, either empty or full. Most of them coming out of Wyoming, and I assume shipping the coal to China or to India.
Well, they're still coming here. Still coal fired plants,
right? But not trains that long. I mean, you can't run a mile long coal train through Chicago.
I'll bet it's pretty close.
I don't know. I mean, I've
seen 100 car ones. I've seen 100 car ones.
When I got stopped on the railroad crossings in lovely LaGrange, I didn't see trains that long. But in any event, you see these gigantic, monstrous, you know, trains with maybe two, three engines on each end, you know, pulling and pushing because of the elevation change.
Well, if you go west on I-80, you see that's the original line. That's the Union Pacific line that went west right next to it. And a matter of fact, Lou, the guys that cited just by regular guys going out basically on horseback and cited the best route for the railroad, they did I-80 by satellite. And they're virtually within the same half mile. And that's how good those guys were. It's pretty spectacular what people used to be able to do with you know, ridiculous. When they built the Moffett Tunnel, they started on both ends. And when they got to the middle, they were something like a quarter inch off. That's not bad.
No. Well, I was talking about this with somebody out here about the, you know, how we really don't have an appreciation for how ingenious people were when they were confronted by, you know, by these kinds of engineering problems and didn't have the computational power to deal with it. And it's remarkable.
I guess I want to take real quick one last question about this thing and then start up. How long do you think it takes from stone cold to get the thing to move?
So from firing up it's an oiler, so you're firing up a boiler, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
But
so
I'll give you a clue, though.
I'll give you a clue. I would say
grade 5 oil.
It doesn't mean anything to me. I would say 45 minutes.
2 days.
Ha!
If you let it get stone cold.
Okay. That's not really practical, is it?
Well, you just never let it get. I said to the guy yesterday, I said, is it warm now? He goes, if you want up next to it, it's warm. Because we're going tomorrow morning. So we can't let it go cold.
Wow.
Grade 5 oil is like bunker oil.
Yeah.
Real heavy stuff.
No, that's hard. That's hard to imagine, but I guess it's comparable to the old diesels that you couldn't let in cold weather. You couldn't let shut down.
All right, bud. So what's up?
Well, I was prepped on Thursday to talk about the debacle that was the Mueller hearing, and I assume you talked with Kevin about that on Friday. There was a real good piece by Andrew McCarthy in the National Review, which will be anathema to some of your more progressive listeners, but McCarthy talked about what was actually happening in there, and it really is a disservice by the people who wrote that report. And I was all set to blame Mueller, but now all of a sudden I understand why the thing looked the way it did. He really did not have much of a, it doesn't sound like much of an oversight role in terms of what was actually going into the report. The weird, the disservice is the fact that they dodged on this obstruction issue. They tried to, they wrote the report, or it looks like they wrote the report, and this is McCarthy's position, and I think it makes sense. They wrote the report, and you operate on the assumption that the people writing the report are Democrats, because they were Clinton supporters, and that they were trying to avoid triggering their superiors, that's the Attorney General, from coming in and saying, I'm the guy with the final say on this, and I'm not going to allow this to go out because I don't agree with your theory of obstruction. Here's my interpretation of the law, and since I'm in charge, my interpretation wins, and here's how we are going to do this. So they were writing in such a way to avoid triggering that kind of response, but at the same time wanting to provide as many hints as they could to the Democratic leadership that, hey, you might have something here to run with if you want to. And, I mean, that's a dishonest or disingenuous way of doing things. And it's one of the reasons why the report reads the way it does. And the weird positions that Mueller was taking with regard to the obstruction. Because what they said was, I think it was, I understand it, if I recall correctly, I mean, Mueller's position was something to the effect of, we didn't take a position on obstruction because of the memo. We never got to look at that, and we never got to make any kind of assessment of the evidence. And that's not what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to do precisely that and either make a call. But the people that were writing the report knew that if they did that, then the report would say, no, there's no obstruction, because the AG, that's what the AG would have, the AG was going to interpret things. And so we don't want to do that. We want to leave enough room there so that there can be a second guessing by the Congress. I'm astounded at the mealy mouth way the report handles the issue. I think it was inappropriate. It's confusing, and there's a reason for that, and it's because they were trying to double deal here.
Well, it's totally confusing because of the directions they were given. I mean, the amount of apologists the man has gotten around. Every time somebody leaves, they get another apologist near him. The simple fact is, he fired Comey because he didn't want a report. He fired Sessions because he didn't get rid of the report. I mean, there's no doubt the way the man. He did not obstruct.
There's no. He did not, although he expressed lots of concerns and he expressed lots of things that he should have kept his mouth shut, the truth is he didn't obstruct.
Well, if you take that point of view, Blagojevich never got a check.
Well, no, I mean, but I do take that point of view. You could say lots of things, but he never moved. And you and I have had the discussion. I don't think Blagojevich should have been should have been convicted of that. He might have been convicted of perjury, but I don't think he should have been convicted of having a phone call. And I'm the short answer is that a president has the constitutional right to do certain things with respect to the people that are working for him. And the execution of those kinds of things for legitimate reasons are not problematic.
Well, we're lucky enough. We've had some pretty bad presidents, Lou, and I think I read this article once about the what the founding. Of course, anybody can say what they thought the founding fathers thought, because they're all dead and they can't debate you. The Supreme
Court
Justice.
They left some pretty clear records on some things they thought.
Well, this one article was when they got to the presidency part, they left a lot of this stuff so open that you can't, the power that the president had, because they really thought every president was going to be George Washington, and they're not. Somebody would have a moral compass.
No, I don't agree with that. If you read the Federalist Papers, they were quite concerned about the kind of person that would be elected president.
Well, do you think they ever expected a guy like this?
Sure. Absolutely.
Maybe?
A demagogue? Absolutely. That's reflected in the... That's why you... One of the reasons why you have an electoral college. And the idea that you would have a guy like this, and that's why you have a Congress, and that's why you have a Supreme Court.
Yeah, but right now the electoral college doesn't do anything like that. All it does is make the election uneven. They don't do anything like that.
The electoral college is designed to offset the influence of super states and highly populous states, and that's because we have a federalist system. But if you read, I can't remember what Federalist paper it is, but this all got kicked around in 2016.
Yeah, but
what makes you think
that the people who in the small states aren't the ones that are the demagogues?
It doesn't matter whether the people in the small states are the demagogues. The idea is that you don't want to, because of the way the country's set up, you don't want a circumstance, and they would not have gotten a country. We would not have gotten a country if the less populous states did not believe they would have at least some mechanism for equal representation as states in the federal system. And the other checks on the power of the president, of the Supreme Court, and the Congress. And the trouble, of course, is that Congress has abdicated much of it to the executive. And nobody screamed when Obama, declared war. I mean, this president hasn't done anything close, as far as I'm concerned, to what Obama did with regard to Libya. Unilateral declaration of war and an attack on another sovereign nation without even getting discussions with Congress. I'm sorry. If this president did that, I mean, that should have been a constitutional crisis. But Congress didn't scream because the press didn't scream.
Well, when did it all start?
I'm not a Trump fan.
When did it all start, Lou? When did it?
I'm very concerned over what I believe is a coup attempt in terms of how this dossier was managed, in terms of how the intelligence and law enforcement agencies responded, and this report and this investigation that was triggered is another example of it. My take on this is that the way this report was written was a very dishonest attempt by the people drafting it to try to circumvent what they knew would be a clear result from an attorney general review.
But why,
I think the Andrew McCarthy article lays that out very nicely.
Right, Lou, but sometimes you have to. I mean, even me, who likes to dig through as many numbers as I can, we only have 30 seconds here. You're going to treat somebody different who essentially on national TV welcomes the influence of another place. I mean, the dude is. I mean, it's not like people did this in a vacuum. They did it because he asked for their help, for God's sake. I mean, SP futures down a quarter, Dow futures up 7, NASDAQ futures up 75 cents. It's kind of hard to give like somebody like that the benefit of the doubt. I mean, it's not like it came out of a vacuum. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Bowers, Mr. Lou Michaels. We got Jack Silverman on the board. S&P futures up a buck. NASDAQ futures up 675. Let's keep pouring money in. Opium to the people, the market, which is fine. My shoulders, my guys are doing good, so everybody's happy, I guess. Got the Dow futures up 11. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 9. Call that flat. FTSE up 113, 1.5%. Wow. CAC ran down 2. Call that flat. We've got over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up down 41. That's 0.2%. Shanghai down 3. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 291. That's a full 1%. We'll get lose views on what's going on in Hong Kong there, because there must be something to do with that. Oil down 5 cents. Call that flat. 56.15. Brent 63.27. So we're talking a $7.10. Well, call that 11 cents. Natural gas 214. I'd be an itchy on this natural gas. If it gets under $2, I have to find a company that has natural gas. Don't really know of one right now, but I'll do some research, because I don't think any of us can buy the natural gas contract. Too darn big. Our Bob dollar 86. We've got gold up $1.10, $14.20. That's where it's been for a few days. Silver up 2 cents, $16.42. Jack, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubbies finally won, huh?
Yeah, they did win. And good morning, everybody. 6:35 in the morning. This sports weather traffic is presented by Luckbox Magazine. The guide to money and probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. We're looking pretty good this morning on the traffic standpoint. Traffic building on the Stevenson, Eisenhower, and Kennedy. The Edens doesn't look too bad right now, and neither do the southbound expressways. It is that time of the year. Lollapalooza is coming up later this week and this weekend, so we do have setup for that going on around the city. And we do have one major point of notice. There is a structure fire to note on Laramie Ave between Harrison Street and Jackson Boulevard. So that should be avoided if you can. In sports, just go to weather first. In weather, it's 76, mostly cloudy, with a high of 80 and showers throughout the day. In Phoenix, it's a lot hotter, 93, partly cloudy, a high of 109 and sunshine. In sports, as you mentioned before, the Cubs did get their win. They beat the Brewers 11-4. Kyle Schwarber, the man batting 228, had himself a career day. 3 hits, 2 home runs, 4 runs, 7 RBIs. Beat the Brewers all by himself. The White Sox, they lost 11-1 against the first place Twins. Starting pitcher Dylan Covey, he threw 14 pitches for the White Sox, 5 earned runs, recorded 0 outs. And the Diamondbacks didn't have much luck either. They lost 5-1 against the NL worst Marlins.
Heck, was a dude pitching underhand?
I didn't watch the game, but I would assume so.
Yeah, well.
Now, if we look into the standings, the White Sox, after that loss, are now 17 games back of the first-place Twins. The Cubs now share first place with the Cardinals. They are both 56 and 49. And finally, the Arizona Diamondbacks. With that loss, they went down to 500, and they are 15.5 games back of first-place Dodgers. Chief.
Lou, I was watching something last week. I don't have a chance to talk to you about it on Thursday.
Before we launch on that, let me just wrap up our last discussion. The people who are actually working with the Russians, who are actually working with them, was the Clinton campaign. Just so we're clear. That dossier that they used to set that self-licking ice cream cone of the FBI investigation was a Russian-sourced document, and it was the Clinton people that had embraced that.
See, I'm surprised.
I can't get horrific. I don't like it, and I'm not a fan, obviously, of either one. But to the extent that Trump was welcoming this stuff, the people that were actually using it were the Clintons, and the FBI, for heaven's sake.
Here's the problem, Lou. Is that, in my opinion, you and I, two reasonably bright dudes, have just fallen into this trap. We spent 20 minutes talking about this in the history of the world, nobody's going to give a rat's ass. And I was watching a show last week, and I'm sitting there going, where the hell is my buddy Lou? He should be in town. He should be sitting next to me. I watched this thing about Nazis and drugs. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I have.
And the Allies decided that since they were starting to give all these drugs to their soldiers and actually making them fight longer because they were giving uppers and stuff, and massive amounts of oxycodone was going to Hitler and other people. And all of a sudden, the Allies decided they were going to bomb the pharmaceutical companies. And it turned out to be amazingly effective. It screwed Hitler up. It screwed everybody up. They were on these things. And one of the companies was Merck that was making the oxycodone. And here we are, fast forward 75 years later, and we got an oxycodone problem. And guess who's our most powerful drug company? Merck. And while we have argued and fought, not you and me personally, but the society spends 90% of their intellectual time fighting back and forth between Democrats and Trump, and they get this, I'll use the term, and he, by the way, he's a huge skill set, and he's done a lot of things I approve of. This, I don't know that he's a buffoon with these tweets, or somebody's paying him to do it, Lou. We spend 80%, 90% of our intellectual capacity pounding down on these tweets, and Obama on the executive orders, and I'm going to say in the last however many years that two of those guys were in office, and throw Bush in there too, because I don't think he knew what was going on. I've never seen, other than maybe in the Robert Barron era, in the big companies, and you were the first person to say, a fascist economic system, move as far forward and get as concentrated and get as... I mean, you look at this guy, he came in here, I mean, Obama, he was going to do something with hospital care, and all he did was give it to the powerful people. This guy was going to spank the prescription drug companies, pulled out of that right away. He was going to do something to Boeing because they charged too much. Guess what? He just gave $100 billion to do something with B-52s. They are so powerful. Do they pay these people to do the brush fire that all of us look at and get sucked into worrying about a Russian election thing 4 years ago that nobody cares about anymore? I mean, should we be discussing why Merck is still here, for God's sake, after what they did in the Nazi era? Our eye is totally off the ball, I think, and you're the one who leads me in that direction.
Okay, let me give you again my take on this. I don't think what happened with this dossier, and I don't think what happened with the Russia investigation, I think the other stuff is distracting us from that, which I think is very important, and I am extremely nervous.
Why? Hillary's gone. They're all gone.
The FBI. And these folks in this situation, and this is something that needs to be ventilated thoroughly before
by who?
Too much time goes by.
By who?
By I'll start with Barr and his people, and figure out exactly what was triggering all
okay,
this.
Okay,
we had
all right,
NSA
all right,
and FBI assets deployed against a political opponent.
Stop for a second. These people, the two creatures, and I use that term purposely, that ran for president, have managed to politicize our law enforcement, our Congress. Name me the Solomon right now that you could put in charge of any investigation that everybody wouldn't think. Who the hell is going to investigate the other side? We had nobody investigate Trump. Who's the Solomon?
I'm not looking necessarily for Solomon. I'm just looking for light.
Who?
I'm not necessarily looking for conclusions. I'm just looking for revelation.
Who are we going to use? We use Bannon? Should we use Navarro? Should we use the new guy who's going in as the NSA guy? I mean,
no. Use Jake Tapper and Fox News and CNN. And
yeah, let those guys get in there.
Let them uncover this stuff and put it out there.
But whoever it is, if I put it out there. Even though I'm in the middle these days and not Democratic anymore, it'd be a Democratic article, it'd be no good. If you did it, even if every word in there was true, it's a Republican article, it'd be no good. We can't do anything right now, Lou.
I don't care about that. What I care about is the fact that this stuff gets out there and that there is some record somewhere that we can look at and say, okay, I can now draw a line from what was going on inside these bureaucracies to get us to the point where the FBI is going with information it knows is unreliable and going to a secret court, getting secret warrants issued against American citizens, against political opponents. I want to know how that happened, and I want that out.
But who's going to do it?
Because that's incredibly dangerous.
Who's going to do it?
Well, fine. As I said, CNN, Fox, Jake Tapper, Brian Stelter. I mean, any of these
people. J. Edgar Hoover did that for 40 years there.
Yeah, and it didn't get out. People were not. It wasn't disclosed. I want this stuff. That, to my mind, that is the most dangerous aspect of this inquiry.
What makes you think, unless you have the right kind of leadership, and I'm saying that Hillary and Bill with their foundation, where they were taking money from other people. Foreign entities for a quote foundation that supposedly had nothing to do with the campaign. Lou, a third grader wouldn't believe that, for God's sake. We know that. I mean,
I want that. I think we're the better for knowing it. I want to know what Jeffrey Epstein was doing. I want to know how a guy who nobody traded with, I want to know how he ran a fund that made him hundreds of millions of dollars, and how he was allowed to operate it and continue to fly under the radar even after he's convicted of being a pedophile.
Lou,
I want to know that, Lou.
How these people? You and I. By the way, we're not arguing. You and I have the exact same.
No, I know. I'm just, my point is that I'm not interested in the politics or the conclusions. We'll each read or reach our own. I just want a clear picture of the reason why
we are both on this show talking to each other, and hopefully people are learning and not just disdaining us, is because we have this incredible curiosity. I want to know how Bernie Madoff got made head of the NASDAQ when he was a slime ball the whole way through.
I'd love to see some accountability for that too.
But I mean, you and I could sit here, and listeners are pretty darn good on this show. If they tweeted in a bunch of people, I'll bet within the week, if you came on every day, we would have 25 to 30 investigations that everybody would want to know the outcome of. And we just run by it. But we never do that in this country, Lou. We never do that.
Well, that goes back to your point, and I don't want to sound like a conspiracy guy, but that goes back to your point about how these ultra-powerful organizations are able to navigate through the kind of chaos that you saw at the end of World War II. And I just, there was a piece, people have forgotten about this, there was a piece in Washington, D.C., and I believe it was on one of the D.C. radio stations, about Wernher von Braun and a bio, you know, on the anniversary of the moon landing and Wernher von Braun and his contributions. And I'm going, you cannot talk about that and not mention the fact that he was a Nazi.
Yeah.
Now, he was a guy who was a complete opportunist and used the Nazis to further his rocket research.
Oh, sure.
But he embraced the party. He used slave labor. He knew what was going on when they were putting those things in. And he's our guy, you know. And the Soviets got their Nazis and pirated them back to Russia. And we need to come to grips with that kind of thing. Because we need to understand how these decisions get made and why.
Lou, I'm not giving you crap, you know, but when you walk out your front door today, look around. Nobody cares about this stuff. When the British came out with the how many years after it was supposed to come out, when they came out with their review of the Iraq War, and it just lambasted all their people, all our people. Do you think anybody here even read it? It was one day's news. Yet those same people are still in power.
I understand what you're saying. All I can tell you is that, you know, people who don't know history are condemned to repeat it, and maybe the curse of the screen generation is that nobody really knows anything. But if you don't know this stuff, and if you're not aware of this history, and you don't see these patterns starting to develop again, you end up with demagogues. You end up with Donald Trumps and
Hillary Clinton's,
other people like him.
Yeah.
By the way, the president's tweeting is, you know, it's either, I think it's impulsive, but I think it's also instinctively clever. As to what he does, and the politics of this are simply crazy.
Hate is a very powerful thing,
he's a counterpuncher. Remember what we talked about this when the election was going on. I said this guy's a counterpuncher, and is not really worried about being tarred with some brush of racism or sexism or whatever. The short answer is that for every Republican candidate has been called a racist, a sexist, whatever. And so those words have now lost their effect. And now that you've got somebody who really is walking that line, the terms have become meaningless.
Lou, the numbers, and maybe you can opine on this, because I really believe it's true. In our lifetime, I mean, not that long ago, I'm gonna say not... Not the Obama thing, but before that, the whole trick was that the math has changed. It's the votes were in the middle, so your job was to run to the left, get your checks, get back to the middle where the votes were. or run to the right, get your checks, get back to the middle, or to vote for it. We're talking about Kennedy, Nixon era, those kinds of things.
Well, I mean, in the primaries, the people that come out are your more dedicated voters.
Okay, but what I'm saying,
and
right now,
those tend to be more extreme.
Trump is smart enough to figure out that if the world was like that, he couldn't win to be dog catcher. But that's not the way the world is. He appeals to the 20-25% of this country that feel that their life would be a lot better if it wasn't for a lot of other people screwing it up for them. However you want to put that, being racist, not racist, it's people that are entitled, people are this. I didn't get into Harvard. You know,
both sides have that, Chief. It's race or it's gender, but both sides feel that way.
But those people used to be Democrats in the factories. You know, they didn't want this kind of person working in the factory or whatever. Or if you were Irish, you worked at Pullman in the wheel building. You know, you didn't work with the Swedish people in the plaster wallpaper part. I mean, it used to be ethnicity that split people apart. A lot of that was language. But, you know, still, both sides didn't really like each other very much because they were just different. Why? And how do you like somebody who's different? That's the American way, right? For some reason. But what I'm saying is, but now he's convinced that since the other side is so disjointed, he'll take his 22%, 25% people that love him. And the more he insults black people, the more some people love him. The more he insults Democrats, the more some people love him. The conservative guy that I met, I won't say who he was, he's from Seattle, former pilot. Why do you like Trump? Well, why wouldn't I? He hates Hillary, he hates liberals, he hates Muslims, he hates Mexicans, and he lowered my taxes. So there are four hates out of five, Lou. And I gotta believe that there's an incredible amount of people that feel exactly the same way. You're gonna get that 20-25%, however high it is, and you're gonna take your chances on the other 75. And all you gotta do is get 25 out of 75 and you're in. And actually you don't even need that if you look at the Electoral College. Which is totally different than the math 30 years ago. He'll just take people who refuse to vote for Bernie or refuse to vote for AOC or she's not running. I mean, I'll take my people plus the people that can't vote for Hillary and I'll scrape by. And you know what? The math is on his side now and he knows that. He's no dummy.
Well, the math actually is on his side only because, and this is an interesting comment from the Electoral College perspective. You are seeing people moving to states that tend to reflect, well, let me put it this way. They're moving to states that tend to reflect their political outlook or their cultural outlook until they can't live there anymore because those states implode, and then they move somewhere else. And we're seeing that in Colorado right now. This exodus of people out of California who love the idea of California virtues and California culture, but they can't afford to live there because those virtues and cultures bankrupt them. They're now moving to Colorado and Arizona and changing the political culture there. But as you get more people into these populous states where you've got huge blue majorities, huge Democrat majorities, you know, Trump understands, you know what, fine, go there, please. Because if you go there, it's like the way I felt when I was in Illinois. My vote in Illinois for a Republican, when I voted for a Republican, didn't count. Because I was under a wave.
Well, why are you? Why were
Trump
you?
Understand?
Whoa! Why were you special? Somebody's vote is a Democrat.
I'm not. I'm just saying my vote didn't count. So Trump understands that the votes of people in California and Massachusetts and other traditional blue Oregon and Washington, those votes are diluted because they're limited by their electoral votes.
Which in most people's mind,
you want to get a 25 million vote majority. In California for a Democrat, great. In a presidential election, it doesn't matter. Good.
What I'm saying is, today, if we would have a constitutional convention, there would be no electoral college, nor should there be.
I disagree.
Well, you disagree because your guy won.
No, I disagree that there. I disagree that we wouldn't have an electoral college. I disagree there would be an elect. That's not the case. You would not have a United States of America without some way of protecting the federal interests of smaller, less populous states.
You would probably have, let's put it this way. I think, I actually don't mind, we had Senator Murphy on, Republican, and he thought we should go halfway to where you should...
Senator Murphy from where?
He was from Illinois. He was a state guy.
State legislature. Well, what part of Illinois?
He was Barrington.
Okay.
I didn't realize there were any Republicans left in Illinois.
Oh, God, yeah. There's all state Senate's probably 45%.
Yeah, there's no party. There's no party, though.
There is, because I've gone to a couple of fundraisers.
Okay.
Well, a lot of white guys in suits.
Okay.
And very attractive lobbyist ladies. Let's just say.
Well, that goes without saying on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. So, but he would take them in the Nebraska model, where you win your legislative district and you get that electoral college vote. The idea that you don't care about, you know, either in a Republican state or a Democratic state for the additional vote, be it Republican or Democrat, then essentially not count.
Yeah, it's not a winner take all.
Yeah, I mean, my concern with Florida, and by the way, at the time I was a Democrat, but I try to be fair. I believe that when the Bush versus Gore fiasco, for lack of a better term, I think Gore got screwed on the hanging chads, but I think Bush got screwed even more because our dim-witted national TV networks didn't realize that a chunk of Florida is in the central time zone, so they called the state for Gore, essentially with an hour left to go in the polls. So I think that probably cheated Bush out of some people. So in the end of the day, but here's my point, Lou, any statistician past the age of 7 will tell you that race was a statistical dead heat. And the idea that there had to be one winner, they should have just split those votes. I mean, the idea that we have this, the Supreme Court is opining on what 50 votes is which way or the other, when any statistician will tell you anything that big within 100 or 200 or 500 or 2,000 votes is a dead heat. I mean, that's insane. I mean,
what the Supreme Court said was you can't apply different standards to different candidates in different places, and that the Secretary of State was exercising her constitutional prerogative in the way she was doing it, and that the state Supreme Court did not have a basis to intervene.
What happened was Kathleen Harris, because she was Republican, declared Bush the winner, and because Americans have the attention span of a gnat, after 3 days they got tired of it, and Gore became the loser chaser.
You know, right, that the New York Times and any number of other press entities went back in there to try to prove that Gore won the state.
I never said that
Bush in fact won it.
I never said that. What I said is, it in my mind it was a statistical dead heat. So for all of the delegates to go one way to me makes no sense.
I understand that, and you know that's a state issue. The Florida, the people of Florida have decided it's a winner take all, and that's how they do it.
Except that
here in Colorado, we've decided that, I say we, the idiots in the state government have decided that the electoral votes in Colorado will go to the winner of the national popular vote, which I think is unconstitutional, but in any event, that's how they've decided recently.
Well,
with a number of other states.
Well, here's the problem with democracy, Lou, is that it's either governing by the majority or tyranny by the majority. You know, the old joke of four wolves in one hen on the board of directors electing what they're going to have for dinner is not all that fair. So
that's why you have. The checks and balances.
Well, but we don't anymore.
Including the court. Yes, we do.
No, we don't.
The Supreme Court and the federal judiciary limit the ability of the president and Congress to do all kinds of
things.
And you see that over and over again with this president.
But you're never going to get the winning. We only have 30 seconds. I want you to hang around if you can. We're never going to get the winning party to say the Electoral College sucks. You're never going to get the 50 people in a city council to say 50 is too many, it should be 35. It's just not human nature, Lou.
Well, and at some point then, all this comes back to the electorate who tend to get the government.
Hang on to that thought. SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 8. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happened. Well, one base Jack. Sometimes Mr. Will Michaels, the ex Silverman on the board. SP futures up 2 now. Is it futures up 9? We've got Fed meetings this week. We got all kinds of economic numbers. We've got the China talk supposedly starting up again. We got a president who says he loves his tariff money. Thinks Chinese are paying for it. Not sure where he gets that, but just saying. Lou, so who are we gonna get that's gonna at least turn back the incredible encroachment of these big companies into these areas? And I never dreamed that the... And then you have a government our government, yours, yours and mine, that even though the medical community is taken over 20% of the economy, they somehow, do they pay people off? Do they threaten somebody? They still only be 5% of the CPI, so we can lie about that number too. I mean, what, this is so contrived. I almost believe like it's a nightmare. One of these days I'm going to wake up from it.
This goes back to our discussion earlier, Chief, about transparency. And I'm not, I can't, all I can hope for and all I do hope for is a clearer look at the facts and a clearer look at the process. And if you put that out there and people aren't going to change their votes because of that, then I throw my hands up. I mean, I don't understand how anybody can vote the way the votes go in Illinois, for example, with the situation that's developed there in terms of the pension debt and the tax rates and everything else that's happening. Why Illinois has not had a wholesale change in government. But you know, it's not like people are not out there pointing out all of the rampant, you know, corruption and everything else that goes on, and yet the same people, the same groups keep getting elected. And I mean, at that point, I'm just saying, you know what? You're getting what you asked for.
Well, let me ask you a question, Lou. This last election, you've heard me, for lack of a better term, rag on the air hundreds of times regarding going down the block to vote for nobody, essentially, in my district. What happened this year in Chicago? And I'm not really all that happy with the new mayor, but. What happened this year that I'm going to say that, pick a number out of the air, 20 to 25 of the aldermanic elections were seriously contested by people who had never been in politics before. My area was a student out of DePaul, got a real good guy. I was talking to him one night, was 2 below 0 in front of my house. It actually made the lady who ended up winning her spot back seriously straighten up a little bit. Even though they were unsuccessful, maybe if one of them would have run against her instead of two, they might have clipped her. But all of a sudden, on that level, we had almost like a renaissance of what I would consider to be somewhat government. Now, how soon they get co-opted, and how soon they realize they can't do anything once they get in there, I don't know. But I surely didn't see it on the state rep or state senate level. I think everybody was unopposed in my thing again. Again, I got my little area for, I'll be straight out with this. It's a huge African American area that is district is going to vote for God knows who they put up. The one guy who got booted out was from my district, and then he ran the next time and he got back in. Now, what he's given these people, I have no idea. But they take a chunk out of what they call the ranch triangle. So they pick essentially, they're not all white. We have black people in our neighborhood. So we actually are fairly integrated. So that part's good. But they take a chunk out of our area, say a different economic class, and there's 15% of the votes that are totally useless, and we're part of this west side spot. So I saw none of that on the state level, at least in my area. Now, whether there was down south or something, I have no idea. But, I mean, somehow it happened on the mayor's side, and yet it didn't. Now, in some states, it clearly did, on both the Republican and the Democratic side. I think if you and I walked around Washington and stepped into this bar and coffee shop, I think we'd find probably 40, 50 people in the House of Representatives that are A, young, B, pretty darn smart, and maybe trying to do something. Now, whether they last 2 years or four before they get the hell out, I don't know. But I think we had a little bit of that, maybe just not in Illinois. Now, to your point, why do we keep doing what we're doing here in Illinois? I don't know. There's an alternative, Lou, and I don't know that people think nobody's ever articulated an alternative. I mean, you get a guy like Rauner in there who had some good ideas, but the guy had a personality of a snail and couldn't convince anybody that his way was the right way. All he did was talk to everybody.
And again, the way the Illinois government is set up, I mean, you're going to have to see some kind of wholesale change out. And I think the only way that happens is in Chicago and in the regions around Chicago. That's where the votes are. I don't have an answer for breaking up the combination that has been running, the combine that's been running Illinois for decades. But it's going to take, I think you're seeing some moves on it now, but it's going to take, and this is what is so problematic for me, and this is why I want more transparency. The only way you get that kind of shakeup with these folks is to get federal entities in there doing the investigation, because your state people are all co-opted. It is, we've talked about this, and I don't have a lot of time left because I've got a call in 5 minutes. This is the problem, by the way, of dealing with people in Europe all the time, which is where we're headquartered. My day starts at 4 a.m. And runs until about, 11 or 12. The problem is that you've got a combination in place that is so pervasive that when was the last time there was a state attorney general prosecution of political corruption in Illinois?
Never.
Yeah. Doesn't that say something? It's not like it's not there.
Well, when Mannequin's daughter is the attorney general. But look, you talk about...
All I'm asking for, you need to have the prosecutions, but the whole point of the prosecutions, again, is transparency, is to put this stuff out into the public record.
We need a constitutional convention, Lou. We need a city convention. I think we might need a national one. But why, as to why somebody, and I'll use the areas mostly African American, I'm going to say why in Park Forest somebody scrapes together their last nickel and buys a house for $56,000 and has to pay taxes of $5,500, why they don't think that something's wrong and run down and pull the same lever of the guy who's there now. Lou, I cannot explain it to you. I don't know how I could.
I don't either, except that, a lot of politics in Chicago is tribal. A lot of politics in the country is getting tribal.
Right.
And to the extent that this tribalism is coming up, it plays into people like Donald Trump. And again, you and I have had this conversation. All I think the Democrats have to do to defeat the president in the next election is not be crazy. And they can't do it.
They can't do it. But Lou, look,
they're turning over.
We go back to Illinois for a second.
They're turning over the public face of the party.
The lady who is now mayor, who I, as an individual and as a mayor, I respect her. But as the mayor, I can't respect her. She got 95,000 votes, Lou. There's 3 million people here.
Yeah.
I mean, so when you talk about the people who are getting massive pension benefits, getting the contracts that everybody in the world would die for, those people now control the elections. If they could, if you can't, if you're a teachers, policemen, firemen union, if you can't control an election, which they almost didn't do because she's probably not one of their people, they almost didn't pull it off this time. But she's not going to throw away those kind of votes by changing those pensions, even if she could. But the fact is, here was the opportunity for somebody to turn the bus around. Even a Bill Daley, if he wanted to become a Bobby Kennedy and all of a sudden just be different and use his knowledge to turn things right, which I think maybe he was capable of doing. Still, you got a Joyce running against him because he's pissed off. They took the airport things against the Joyce family 20 years ago, so they knock off 30,000 Daley votes so he doesn't get in a runoff. We got that kind of thing going for. We couldn't have, the guy from the school board who knew he wasn't going to win, he couldn't stand down. Or Tony Preckwinkle couldn't stand down and say, okay, well, I'll give this one to somebody else. I already got my job. But everybody has such an ego. Anybody could have won this thing if a few other people would have said, I'm with that guy. But they didn't. I mean, this is insanity. Now, she's in there. What power does she have with 100,000 votes, Lou?
Yeah, I agree. But as I said, the best you can do, I think, is to get, the Illinois Journal and whoever else is out there, Kristen McQuarrie and, the other investigative reporters, and just ventilate this stuff over and over and over again.
What do you do with that? What do you do with that? I mean, Mike Royko would not get a job today, Lou. You don't see any of that stuff. Where is your... I'm on your side, but I'm playing
no,
devil.
No, I understand.
Where is the budget?
You are getting that information out. There's a whole recent spate of articles about what's happened at O'Hare and the contracts at O'Hare.
I dated a girl whose father was part of that. That was a revelation, and it was 1977. Her dad was in the canteen corps.
It needs to be put out there again. People need to see that. People need to hear about it. I mean, that's one of the great things John Cass does. John Cass writes with a historical perspective about... I mean, when I moved to Chicago 20 years ago, I didn't know about that guy that took all the quarters and nickels and dimes out of the toll, the toll machines.
Yeah.
He was going home with bags of change in his car. I didn't know about that.
Well, but look,
I didn't know about a bunch of
but
the
he
paper
is,
bag,
he's,
bags
he,
full of money, changing
he,
hands.
But he's I like John Cass, by the way. He's very
yeah.
gentle. He's today's political satirist, investigative guy.
If
a young Walter Jacobson walked into Channel 2 and said, I'm going to spend 2 weeks under on Wacker Drive like a homeless person and find out who's making the money, who's selling the stuff, all that kind of stuff, where crack cocaine's coming from, they're not going to give him that budget, Lou. Nobody will.
No, I understand. But the history of that needs to be out there. And as I said, I one of my all-time favorite bars, and I'm not going to mention the name of it, but it's right across the river in River North. You know, they still have the pictures up on the wall when the Sun-Times, you know, put that undercover team in there, bought the bar and ran it as a bar just to show the payoffs that were necessary to get a bar up and running.
Yeah, but it wasn't the Breanne Tap.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean it was genius. It was genius. That's one of my all-time favorite places. People need to know about that.
We had a party, real quickly while you're still here. You ever been to O'Callaghan's?
Yes.
Well, Danny Callahan owned the place, traded right in front of me in the OEX pit. I knew all the Callahans. There were five of them in the OEX pit. Terrific family. Jack was on the board of the CBOE and CBOT forever. Real nice guy. And they open up this bar. Well, of course, they're having trouble getting a liquor license. And so Danny says, well, we got this perfectly good bar. Why don't we at least have a party? All the people in the OEX pit invited. We go there. We have a party. Danny pays for all. He bought how many kegs of beer. There was no hard booze or anything. Nobody paid for anything. He just closed the door. It was not open. All of a sudden, I look out the window. I see a massive blue, like four paddy wagons. I'm talking four paddy wagons, maybe 10 squad cars. This little Irish guy with his huge bulbous drinking nose, he hadn't have his ass out of the precinct in 30 years, walks in with his billy club and slams it on the bar, and he goes, this bar is closed. So Jack Callahan gets on a thing and says, well, we seem to have a problem. Would everybody just quietly leave? Or puts their drink down and walks out. We're all adults. Everybody walks out, and all these coppers are there with their billy clubs ready for this big brawl. Everybody just walked right by him. Hi, officer. So finally, I said to this one guy, what are you guys doing? He goes, what do you mean? We're raiding this bar. He goes, it's not a bar. It's a private party. The guy goes, you got to be kidding me. I said, no. Well, no, but of course, they've had all this expensive equipment and everything. And, you know, Callahan's, whatever. They gave him this ticket. They gave him all this stuff. They go to court. They had three or four cops perjuring themselves, saying they saw money going across the bar. They called this cash register because they were not going to, you know, let this one go to the top of the thing, saying that they had told they raided a private party with half the equipment on the north side. They perjured themselves. So I'm thinking, if they were willing to perjure themselves for that, what are they going to do for a murder thing? We've seen that.
Well, you watch that with the Laquan McDonald shooting.
And this is a private party, Lou.
And again, that's part of the process, and the breakdown of you know that power structure. You have to have that, and that's the best you can do, I think.
And Danny,
I gotta run.
Okay. Thanks, Lou, for hanging around a little bit. Good to have our Lou fix. SP Futures. Are we going to break, Jack, or no?
I mean, we can if you want, but we don't have to.
Why don't we go to a quick break, and then we'll come back, and Jack and I are going to wire for 10 minutes, then we'll have David. SP Futures up 75 cents. NASDAQ futures up 525. We got a waiting thing today. Fed announcement on Wednesday. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
President of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jacks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters, the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
White horses. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Jack Silver on the board. We'll have Mr. David Andelman in a few minutes, but right now I want to zero in on Jack. I don't really have a chance to talk to him that much because he's here as an intern for the summer. Jack, you're an Indiana guy, correct?
That is correct.
You and David. David did his master's down there. I don't know if you guys ever talked about that, but he did his master's down there. S&P futures up $1.50. Jack, the world is somewhat different than when I was in your age and in college because our world was dominated by the Vietnam War, and to say that students were abreast of the current news is an understatement, since the news might have you carried off with a gun in a jungle any day. So to say people were interested, you can only imagine, I would think. I mean, you guys don't have to deal with that, thank God. I'm not saying that was a good thing, but it certainly was not. You're obviously buffeted by current events and the politics of today. The politics, really of, it is so much different. I mean, you didn't have, when President Kennedy said we will be in the moon and by the end of the decade, he meant we. He didn't mean the Democrats. Republicans won't help. Or if he'd have been a Republican, we're going to do it despite the Democrats. They sort of meant we. They came out of a generation where. You didn't, when you went to fight in World War II, which Kennedy did, you didn't go as a Republican or a Democrat, you went as a soldier, as an American. And it was kind of different, and now all of a sudden things are kind of going sort of the other way. But what do you guys, when you're, going to class, and obviously that's a big part of your day, and we used to go play basketball and then do homework and go drink, but that was our deal, but, what do you make, it's a big question, what do you make of all this stuff? I want to look at it, throw a statistic at you. You have a president and his people. Virtually, you can't turn on the TV without one of him or his apologists, Kellyanne or the new guy who's the chief of staff. You're being told, Jack Silverman, you are this is the greatest economy we've ever had, the greatest amount of growth in the job market, the greatest change in the lowest unemployment rate ever. This is the best anybody's ever done. Solomon, you name it, I'm the guy. And yet if you go to the page where it has, the statistics, I think, over a long period of time don't lie. They do maybe over a month. In Trump's 3.5 years, we have 5.5 million people more unemployed. I'm going to say that's pretty good. In the 4 years before him, Obama's, 9 million people went to work. I'm not a fan of Obama's. I'm not trying to detract from Trump. But do you guys, do somebody in your place, I'm sure the professors do, look at these numbers and go, why are people that I pay their salary feel it's their job every day to get on TV to lie to me? What do you think about that when you A, do people not go back and look at the numbers like I do? Do you eventually believe it over time? Do you constantly ask a question every time somebody opens their mouth from Washington, I think they're lying, which is not healthy? What goes through your mind?
I mean, to start off, I don't think people look at the numbers as much as you do at campus, just because it's just not something as many people are inherently interested in. And I feel like that may change, because I was only in my first year, so people were still exploring everything. But I feel like maybe after junior year and senior year, when they understand what they want to do and they understand what they want to go into, they start looking at the numbers more often if they're interested in that. But when we always hear something like that, at Indiana, so it's a big Republican state, but it's a college campus, so college campuses are generally Democratic more. So there's a lot of mixed opinions about everything. And I feel being there, you get a broader perspective, I would say, just based on the many different opinions that are brought to you. And I'd say you try to take what's good and try to leave what's bad, but at the same time, it's not easy to find what is good and what's bad. You have to try to figure that out yourself.
We felt at our age, I mean, when we started talking about body counts and people telling us we were winning a war, everybody knew in their gut we weren't. Your dad's probably younger than me, but people in my generation absolutely have a problem believing people, because we were lied to the whole time. And a lot of our buddies, well, I didn't have too many people that I knew. Unfortunately, I know my cousin was a casualty, but that's one. That's more than we saw people, you know, and all you got to do is run along the lakefront and you see going by with artificial limbs that believed, you know, that we were actually doing the right thing in Iraq. Is your instinct whenever you see one of these people talk to not believe them or to believe them? I mean, I hope it's to believe them, because I think most people are like that, and you should be doing that. But to me, it's absolutely the other way. Are there guys like me there or not?
I mean, in my opinion, there's no when you first see something, there's no reason to not believe it. But with everything that goes on, just in general, I feel like you have to be more of an inspector and try to find things to not believe, and try to be more skeptical of what they're saying, even if you want to believe it, and even if you think it's true, you have to think of all the different scenarios and everything that's going on.
Yeah, fortunately, you guys have, I don't know, we only got a couple minutes. What's the situation in Indiana? I mean, when you're on a campus, so you're not seeing much of that. I know in Chicago, we just had 400 people leave Illinois to go to Afghanistan for a year. You don't see a whole hell of a lot of that. Now, my relatives live in Columbus, Ohio, not Columbus, Indiana. Columbus paper, seeming like every week, there's a group in Ohio that's going someplace or coming back. It's still very military-oriented in Ohio, and everybody, there's a National Guard unit in every little town, that kind of stuff. And you really don't see that here in Chicago. What's it like down there? Do you know people that have been to Afghanistan and Iraq and those places?
No, not really. I mean, it's a school of 30-plus thousand people, so...
There's not a big ROTC presence there?
I mean, that's what I was going to say. It's 30-plus thousand, so there is a large ROTC presence, but at the same time, it's not like everyone wears their suit every day. It's a thing that once a week or once however often.
Okay, whenever they go around to the thing. Okay,
and it's if you talk to somebody, they'll usually mention it, but it's not like something that's like absolutely massive.
But you guys don't. There's in the town of you're in Bloomington, right?
Correct.
In the town of Bloomington, there's not, you know, three motor brigades that have headed off and come back and that type of thing like you see.
No, Bloomington's, you know, like, even though Bloomington has a large campus and it's a large school, it's still a very small town. And it's still in the middle of nowhere.
So it's like Champaign, sort of, in that regard.
Yeah, I'd say it's very similar.
Every school's different. I was down there a couple times. I actually kind of liked it. But I remember they had swimming pools all over the place, and they were a national power in swimming, I don't know if they still are, but But they were big on swimming down there. SP Futures up $1, NASDAQ Futures up 475. A lot of people from my school here, my high school are going there, Marist. Some of the girls are going down there playing volleyball and soccer and so forth. You guys are recruiting pretty well up here, kind of for the first time in a while. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks, Mr. David Adelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Mr. Jack Silverman. Hey, Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jacks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jacks. Jack, I think we're going to be the beneficiaries of the real magazine on tomorrow when Jeff comes in. He says the cover's even better than last month. And last month was pretty neat. I'm going to put it on my table at home so people think I am somebody. What do you think?
Sounds good.
The SP futures up a buck and a half. And NASDAQ futures up 750. We were down a little earlier, but we're creeping. We're a little bullish on the week because we think the Fed's going to follow the lead of God knows what, the people over in Europe. We got to go to negative interest rates. We're not sure why, but we're going to head that way. Dow up 17. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 19. That's 0.1%. FTSE, for some reason, up 137. It's 1.8%. They might have been off on Friday. I think they were, which gives them a double up here. CAC round up 10. 0.1 over in Asia. We've got Nikkei down 41.2%, Shanghai down 3.1%. Hang Seng, there's probably something to do with the riots, down 291. That's a full 1%. Oil down 2 cents. Call that flat. Brent down 17. Not much going on there. Gold's up $1.10. Hanging right in here at this 1420 number. Silver up 2 cents, 1423. This is by the way, you might want to take a look. This is a tough one to. It's really a tough one to trade. So I'm certainly not gonna tell people they should, but. I might start looking, and if it stays down here, maybe we'll get somebody on who can teach us which of the oil companies have a lot of natural gas. Because last year, as you recall, it spiked to 325 when we had the cold November. 214 is pretty darn low. So anyway, on the bonds number, we've got a 10-year yield is 2.05. We've got the Bund minus almost 0.4% now, minus 0.355. Japan minus 0.14. UK is positive 0.64, and France is minus 0.14. So we got like trillions of dollars that are negative stuff, and the Fed is kind of heading that direction here, and I don't really know why. But Jack, what do you got for us, Trevi, Weather Sports?
Good morning, everybody, once again. It's 7:36 in the morning. We do have a lot more traffic than we did earlier this morning. All of the major expressways, the Stevenson, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Edens, are all backed up. The southbound expressways don't look too bad. We do have one accident to report. There's a structure fire at Laramie Ave between Harrison Street and Jackson Boulevard. So if possible, avoid that. In weather, Chicago, it's 76, mostly cloudy currently, with a high of 80 and showers. In Phoenix, it is 93, partly cloudy, with a high of 109 and with sunshine. In sports, the Cubs won 11-4 over the Brewers, allowing them to reach first place in their division, tied with the St. Louis Cardinals, 56-49. The White Sox lost 11-1 against the first place Twins, which pretty much disallows them from making a run to the playoffs. They still have a chance in the wild card, but they're 12 games back, so it looks highly unlikely right now.
I got a chance to be a jockey in a fifth race today too.
Very nice.
Yes.
And finally,
do you want to be that horse?
I'd love to.
Me riding him? Thank you, Jack, for that.
And finally, the Diamondbacks. They lost 5-1 against the nationally worst Marlins. This brought them 3.5 games back with the wild card. Still very much in contention. Chief.
What do you, so wild card, the Mets are actually gearing up.
David is here.
David, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
The sad sack Mets are actually gearing up, thinking they got a chance for the wild card race.
Yeah, we traded our number 4 and 6 prospects for Marcus Stroman, which, I mean, I'm good with it. We're 6 games back with the wild card. And Marcus Stroman is.
When you say we, who's your team?
Mets.
You're the Mets, yeah?
Yes. My brother's a Yankees fan, so okay. I pretty much chose the Mets because of that.
I would say it's not a bad move, but how's the new stadium? I've never been there.
It's nice. I mean, they built at the same time as Yankee Stadium. I think they're both great stadiums. And I would definitely say that if you have a chance to go to both, I would definitely say go to both. I would say Yankee Stadium has that, like, that pristine, like, clean vibe, like how the Yankees have it.
Yeah.
But I feel that Citi Field definitely has that, just like a more New York.
I would love to just go out there, and I'd like to tour. I think I do better on the tours, Jack and David, than I do just going and watching a game, if you're trying to see the place.
I mean, if you're seeing a place, tour is amazing, but I feel like to get the full experience, you have to see the game.
I'd like to see the two new basketball. It was the old Madison Square Garden. I'd like to see the remodeled version. Plus, that place in Brooklyn, the guy built, the Russian guy, is supposed to be awesome.
Yeah, I've been to MSG once.
Nice.
A couple years ago, and then I was at the Barclays Center. They're both incredibly nice. Of course, MSG has that history, but Barclays Center was built recently, and it's incredibly
nice. Think about the Madison Square Garden, David, is there can be 25,000 people there, and 10 minutes after the game's over, there's not a soul around. You're on top of about 15 rail lines, and everybody goes down.
I was there, but it was got to be 20 years ago.
But everybody like, where'd everybody go?
Much different now.
Well, they just go downstairs, they get on the train, and they're gone.
Right.
It's pretty special. Even Yankee Stadium's got, 3 or 4 subway lines right there. I mean, it clears out pretty quick.
So does City Field. All of them have easy public transportation.
Really? Let's, the only thing I did hear, our girl Jay-Z was over in Brooklyn, and one of her friends' parents lives there, and she goes that the L lines are kind of like here, though, that if you want to go from the southern part of Brooklyn to the northern part, you got to go to Manhattan and go back out. There's everything leads, like, you know, through Manhattan.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm not incredibly well versed with Brooklyn, but a lot of things do go through, like Manhattan and Times Square.
So, David, we got an interesting week in front of us. How are we going to trade? There's an article here I dug up because I knew you'd be on this morning. Here's a guy who, I'm pretty sure it's a guy, but it's a guy who charts the VIX. He's a VIX chart kind of guy. And he, says the stock market be in for a VIX explosion. Sven Heinrich, you ever hear him?
I do not know who that is.
But he's charting that whenever the VIX patterns get like this, and it's starting to look just like from 215 to like 218, get scrunch, 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 then it blows. And he says if you go back, the it looks like you got the narrowing something, narrowing pattern. And once it gets down to a certain number, then it blows and it narrows again for another 2 years. Two or three, however long it is.
Yeah, he's probably talking about a wedge.
Yeah.
Like a falling wedge where the tension mounts as the, you know, ranges get smaller and smaller. And then, you know, but you don't know. It could go through the bottom of the wedge or the top, and you don't know which one. But I would just say, you know, 112. 111 to 112, I'm sorry, not 111. 11 to 12 is kind of a benchmark. You know, certainly anything below 11, I think the market's getting complacent. And if it, you know, holds in the 12 area, you know, then it's maybe just a trading range between 12 and 15. That's the way it looks. So but you know, you have to also consider the season. This is, you know, end of July going to August. That is dog days, and you got a lot of holiday closings, especially, you know, end of year, you know, summer vacation with kids, you know, before they go back to school here, and jewelers' holidays and some bank holidays in Europe. So you tend to really get the dog days of summer where, you know, there's contraction in the daily ranges and volatility anyways. You really don't know until after Labor Day when things tend to pick up.
Well, he sounds like you here. And with the month of August approaching, which typically sees the lowest trading volumes of the year, investors similarly may not be prepared for the swings that could occur. He goes, I see a lot of complacency right now. He goes, this week we had bad news about antitrust investigations for NASDAQ. What did the NASDAQ do? It made new all-time highs. So it's not pricing in any bad news whatsoever, which is, you know, sort of interesting. He says this is what I want to ask you about. Because let me add one additional point, very important. From a NASDAQ perspective, while we've seen the NASDAQ make new highs, there's no visible expansion in new highs versus new lows in these indicators. It's very much flatline. So, again, we're seeing participation waning in favor of a few individual stocks in NASDAQ. You seeing the same thing?
Yeah, but the problem with... I mean, there's some inherent problems with that argument. I don't know the individual. I'm sure he could poke fun at me as well. But, you know, the two main focus issues on the regulatory scene are Facebook and Google. Well, they both reported.
Yeah. And
Google was a shock because of revenue expansion, including ads. And Facebook was above estimates as well. So the market was trying to price in some bearishness, and especially in Facebook, and certainly in Google before that. And what happened was the earnings news was positive, which is difficult. And as far as the rest, yeah, I pointed out two Mondays ago that, you know, the number of issues at then highs below their 200-day moving average in the S&P 500 were 52%. Versus 48% above. Now, I'm sure it's ameliorated a little bit since then, but not much. But you know what? I've seen studies where if you go back to the IBM heydays and the like, not maybe to this extent where you have four or five of the FANGs plus Microsoft, you know, and Apple or MAGA or, you know, all the acronyms. you really can find many, many other times in history, you know, even back to the GE and AT&T days when they were leaders, that, you know, especially in the Dow, which is price-weighted, but even in the S&P, that 4, 5, 6, 10 issues at the most dominated the indexes. So this isn't, it's more prevalent now, it's more obtrusive now, but not historically it compares.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The difference, to me is that the, and I can't, you know, put a number on it, but in those days, with the possible exception of IBM, which always was a reasonably high priced stock, the idea was that the leaders like to make the investing public somewhat inclusive. Now, they didn't have ETFs in those days, which allows people to trade this stuff without actually having it, but I mean, AT&T was a leader, but it also was the, you know, the account, the stock that was the most widely held in the country.
Right.
Where you're not going to get, where now the leaders basically said we're ETFs and we're hedge funds. I don't know that I've ever had a client that had 1,000 shares of Amazon. I mean, I don't know if I ever will. I mean,
right.
it's just too much money. So
right.
the when you have, I mean, they're literally owned, you know, 45-50% by whatever you want to call it, funds and whatever. They're not even owned
institutions.
If they've been institutionally held, which, you know, I don't know what to make of that, David. Whether if in a really bad time, if all these people get in trouble and they just have to puke this stuff out, I mean, what does that mean? I mean, we haven't seen that in a while. We did see it in 2008, and they were merciless, pretty much, right? I mean,
right.
They were selling stuff, I think, at prices that they probably shouldn't have been, but because they had to. So, I mean, there's a lot of little variables in here. I don't know that the markets are, you know, the amount of bids and offers, how many bids are just in there, locked in. And how many buyers are there right now? I mean, you see some, you know, right below the market, there always seems to be a bid, especially with the Fed, you know, essentially going to pour
money. No question. And I've been pointing out, you know, for weeks on my weekly focus stock list and in other commentary that I write, you know, 2-5% correction, it needs it, and price momentum oscillators. And those facts, you know, those technical issues are still in place. And I can add some double divergences where the underlying price momentum oscillators are not making new highs with the underlying. There's all kinds of technical arguments for, if nothing else, some minor corrections. And yet, like you said, every single time that you get 2%, which we did get, you know, but it was minimal in the context of things, there's a bid under the market. There just is.
Well, yeah, I mean, I honestly don't.
I guess it's this fear of missing out that, you know, so the psychology, really, what you hear public and, you know, talking heads on, you know, CNBC, Bloomberg News, you know, whatever, is not all that positive, and yet, you know, then the money managers underperform, and, oh, geez, we can finally buy the market 2% cheaper. We better jump in, otherwise our performance, you know, versus, you know, funds are going to look worse.
I would say, David, in the last couple of months, I've had occasion, I mean, not necessarily to be managing money for them or anything like that, but I've had occasion to talk to a lot of, especially, I'm going to say, older retired people. To be quite frank, a few of the accounts I didn't want. The drive, the expectations that there is no concern about risk. I just want to be, if the NASDAQ's what's going up, that's what I want to be in. That's what you should be in. That's what I would pay you to do. You can understand why I pretty much balked on some of these people, because I don't want that. I mean, because I don't want anybody to take that kind of risk on my watch. Because not only if the market went down, it would be my fault, but it's not proper for them. Okay.
I agree.
But I mean, we're trying to talk them into that.
Especially one individual done extremely well this year, and oh geez, John Jones at the other place is doing even better, but. It's IRA. The guy's in the middle 70s. He's fairly well experienced, but not tremendously. And, you know, I want all in, because if you're not all in, if you put 25-30% of my money leaving it in cash for opportunity or just to cushion, you know, a market correction. You're not performing because the other guy's got me all in.
Right, all in. And, the people who can least afford to make the risk are the people that are riskiest.
Right.
I mean, I remember going to there was a time when everybody chased, you know, and I'll use that term. I don't know if I mentioned this on the air before. I'm giving this talk speech. It was, you know, my presentation. Well, that's a proper term, a presentation down in Phoenix. And they just had one of those. I don't see these too many anymore. Are people, I'm going to say this, old people still chasing these Canadian REITs, oil REITs, or the oil, is that kind of died down? I think it's kind of died down.
I haven't had demand for that for a couple, 3 years.
Yeah, me neither, right? Well, one of these places, and David and I are pretty conservative, but I look at these things, and I'm like, wow, this thing's trading $21, and it's paying like a $3 dividend. And I'm thinking, okay, so I dig into the place, not a Canadian company, and I'm not Mr. Internet savvy, but I'll go someplace, Yahoo Finance or someplace that actually has a balance sheet and income statement, and I'll find that the place is making, you know, 50 cents. And I'm thinking, okay, let me get this straight. We're making 50 cents, and we're sending out a check for $3. How the hell does that work exactly? I asked around because I took a lot of accounting in school, and I'm sure you did too, David, when you got your MBA. By the way, David went to the same school as Jack, Indiana. I'm thinking, I know in this country, I don't know what the rule necessarily is, David, but I think the rule is you can really only pay dividends out of income. Now, if you have one quarter where you write something off, you know, an asset, and your income is negative, I know you can still play the dividend that quarter. I don't know what you have to say that it's, if it's a one-time charter, there's something you have to do. But by and large, the idea is that you pay dividends out of income.
I suppose you could float a debt issue.
Well, but I mean, in general, that's the U.S. way. Now,
right.
I think in Canada, especially with pipelines and things like that, I think they can pay it out of cash flow. And if you have a big negative amortization on maybe the pipeline or some kind of depreciation allowance or something, you don't count that against the cash flow enough to where your income was less, but you can still pay more on the dividend. Bottom line is, David, I didn't feel I understood it. So if I didn't understand it, I didn't feel like I wanted to put anybody in it.
That's
basically
my
bottom line. That's why I cannot get in this, what's Jack Ma's company? I've had people demand that I put him in there.
Alibaba.
I absolutely cannot put anybody in there. I do not understand the structure that you get an income stream out of Bermuda or some damn place. You don't have any of the assets. I just want no part of it for my people. Now, maybe I'm missing an opportunity, but you know what? There's a lot of opportunities. Anyway, so I go to this seminar.
And it's not Jack Ma's place anymore either.
But, you know, he does personally. All the assets are his.
Right.
Whatever they have, you know, I don't know, trucks and
stuff. But, as far as title. And a lot of the marketing and whatever strategies and, you know, cyber and, you know, fake goods and all this stuff that he did, in fact, hands-on supervise, he's definitely taken a step back. So the brilliance and expertise of his, he's there, but he's not really hands-on like he was.
Right. Well, so this particular stock, they decided to cut the dividend from, like, $3 to 25 cents. So the stock goes from like $21.50 to, I'm going to say, $3, something like that. So I get in this room, and the average age is, you know, 70-something. It's in Scottsdale. And by the way, anybody here get caught with that Canadian dividend? Virtually every hand went up.
Yeah.
I mean, if one of those guys, wherever they go for coffee or country clubs, wherever they're in, finds a place paying a dividend, it could be dividend turtle eggs in Zimbabwe or someplace, these guys will find it. And as long as they're paying that dividend, they pile on that. One of them understood. I don't think they did because I tried to understand and I couldn't. They just got clobbered on this thing. It didn't matter.
I can remember anecdotally, I had a guy who sold dental supplies in the Southeast, good client, 10 years, 12 years client, made him consistent money, not incredible returns, but consistent. And he comes up to, what do you think of Trump bonds in Atlantic City? I said, what are they paying? Oh, 14%. Prime was about 6.5 at the time, 7 maybe. I said anything that's paying double and double prime is probably really risky. He says, sorry, I got to close. He put everything in him. He called me two months later and said that the bonds had gone from, you know, 80 to 40.
Yeah, it's but you know, we've gone through times though, David, where I'm going to say, on when I was on the, I started on the trading floor, the Dow was 800. Okay, so, but really from 1981, early 81, to, you know, there was only 125 stacks in the CBOE, and they were the, right. They were the creme de la creme of stacks. Not one of them ever went bankrupt, even in those times. It was right. it was later. It was 2000 and when did United and General Motors?
2001.
Yeah.
.com bomb.
Well, when did United and GM went up? 9/11.
Right.
So I mean those. You couldn't even really explain risk to people. Nothing had ever gone to zero. So when right. when you talked about risk, you talked about calls, selling calls, and the thing doubled in price, not going to zero. And there were times where people actually felt, even with junk bonds, when the economy was good, and this is what you have to be careful of, when the economy was good, even junk bonds, if you looked at the way they were priced, above prime and above other stuff, you would say that if you put a package together of 30 or 40 of them, virtually 10% of them could go out of business and you'd still be ahead, you'd still be okay, and that's the way they were priced.
Right.
And I'm going to say, David, this is what the guy from got the bad toupee. They actually designed these things originally. It was a guy from Drexel. What the hell's his name? I always forget his name. Milken. Michael Milken. I'm going to say, David, that instead of 1 in 10 going belly up, maybe 1 in 50 did. I mean, you did really well in those things. Really well.
Sure.
You know what
you're doing, the extra, you know, income. Especially if you can compound it, did you right?
I mean, but whoever was putting them together, plus it was a growth period, economy was doing well. You didn't see too many bankruptcy. Interest rates were going down, so these things they were a tremendous investment as a category. Now, of course, you could have gotten the one clunker that went to zero, but I mean,
right.
It was a tremendous investment as a category for a long time. Stocks were a tremendous investment until what? 10 of the biggest names went out of business. General Motors, right. United, Kmart, Sears. I mean, Sears almost, pretty much. But we're talking zero, not you know, 50 to 40. We're talking the big
Bear
zero.
Stearns,
you know.
$1.10 to $2.
Yeah.
Jamie Dimon rescued them at 10.
Well, then you got, you know, Citigroup. Everybody forgets. Was it 10 to 1?
Yeah.
The reverse split. So don't think for a second that you're whole in Citigroup. You're not.
No.
But so this week, what I'm going to say that we're fully priced. If the Fed does a quarter, I'm sneakily thinking it might be a half, David. I don't want to get that out too much because of the way they're pumping money into the system. Does a half run us up? I mean, nothing, I think, tanks us. It's hard to tell with these guys.
Well, although when you say fully priced, and again, I'm relying on the technicals. I mean, they look tired. They really look tired. The stochastics and relative strength indexes and whatever, they will not make new highs. They just don't. It doesn't matter what the price action is. So it's not just the absolute raw numbers, but it's the divergences and you have trade. I mean, the trade negotiators are there. They come out and say, hey, this is 6 months, 10 months, maybe never. You know, that could certainly be.
All right, they will be able to tell everybody.
155 issues reporting out of the S&P.
Now, remember on Thursday, we got to tell everybody we knew exactly what was going to happen. Talk to you later, man.
I'm calling for 2% down.
S&P futures up. Wow, S&P futures up 1.25. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty.
Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.